Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Online Warriors podcast, a recording immediately post Eclipse, and we're all still
my
here.
Eyes.
If you happen to be in the neck of the woods that allowed you to see the totality, I don't know, let me know how it was. I'm sure it was something. I'm League 86. I'm joined by Technic and Nerd Bomber. You know, it's over. I don't know. Like, is this one of those things where, like, we kind of just, it happened and now no one's going to be, I mean, no one should really be talking about it a day from now, right? Like, this is maybe the last people are going to be.
We had one a couple of years
Eclipse
back.
Happened.
Too. So, like,
what, wasn't it like 7 years back?
It was 2017. Yeah, we talked about this last week.
And I think it was the same effect. It was like, wow. All right, back to the old grindstone.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll be maybe here for the next one. The next one from now, I think, is like in the 2040s or something, but I don't remember. Anyways, that happened. And now, as you're listening to this, it's Wednesday, because I assume you just tuned in as soon as you possibly could. I also think, I think March Madness is like ending tonight.
Is it
but
ending
don't quote
tonight?
Me on that. So a lot of things are happening. I think there is, let me Google this. Yeah, it's starting in 15 minutes.
Oh, interesting.
Which, first of all, that's super late. Like, it's we just started recording. It's 9:05 p.m.
Eastern Standard Time.
Eastern Standard Time. And the game doesn't start for 15 minutes. It's going to be going into the wee hours. And I guess I don't know how long basketball games are. Anyway, it's not the point of this. But I don't know. Go Purdue/go Connecticut Huskies.
Purdue,
I don't know who
please.
You're rooting for. But those
that's
are the,
my bracket.
Those are the two teams that
give
are playing.
Purdue.
Oh, you're still, that's still happening. Yeah. Are you, at this point, isn't it kind of like over? Didn't you, if you made it this far, didn't you kind of like win?
No.
Or is it not that simple?
There is one other person who picked Purdue, and I think they're going to beat me in terms of just points in their overall bracket. But no, I'm just playing for, second place. Yeah.
Pride. All the best to you and to all who are betting out there tonight on the outcome of this game, be it with your hearts or with your wallets. We're going to be talking tonight about a couple of video games. I'm not going to say the titles because that would give up the ghost here in the first 2 minutes of the cast. We're also going to be talking about advertisements. And man, am I so excited to talk about advertisements. I don't know if I've talked much about my general stance on ads on the podcast, but I'm about to. And people may or may not like it, but it gives me a chance to do so. And in fact, I want to start with that. So let me just say the story before I go on a little rant sickhole. Roku has put a new patent together that reveals that it wants to basically put ads on your TV when your TV is idle. Now, when I say that your TV is idle, what it actually means is that you could be playing a game on your PS5. This is an example that IGN uses, by the way. You could be playing a game on your PS5, and you could pause it because you got to go to the bathroom, or you want to go microwave some pizza pockets, whatever the result, or whatever the reason may be. Roku will determine a way to detect, basically, your TV is idle, so here's an ad. Same thing could happen on Apple TV if you pause a movie or on your Fire Stick, whatever. So it's not even just like on the Roku home screen, which, by the way, I think already does have ads. This is more so than that. This is just, very
invasive.
I don't know, guerrilla warfare advertisement. Roku is a traditionally ad-heavy company. I learned this from reading this article. Apparently, they lose money every TV they sell, which I have, I believe, multiple Roku TVs.
Honestly, that tracks because they're super cheap and decently good quality.
Yeah. They partnered last year with Best Buy to have Best Buy exclusively sell its smart TVs. And in return, Best Buy would get to just pump ads into these things, which is an interesting arrangement. Here's my thing with ads. And I probably have talked about this. Like, for example, when we do our post-Super Bowl episodes, we probably talk about ads a decent amount. I don't, there is such thing as a good ad. There's such thing as a good TV commercial. There's such thing as a good radio commercial. There's such thing as a good podcast ad, as we know, having put ads into our podcasts. There are also such things as bad ads that I don't know why money is spent on them because they're never going to work. And I feel like this is one of them. Like, who is going to be coming back from the bathroom and about to jump back into their PS5 game and look and be like, oh, I do need fabric softener. I'm going to go buy Downy because I saw this ad on my TV that's just assaulting my eyeballs.
But that's
not
the point. Them pumping ads is them to allowing them, regardless of if the person sees it, they're allowed to go, hey, we'll put ads on every platform. So like from a company, they might go, ooh, wow, and not actually use common sense like you're applying here.
I'm not talking about Roku. For Roku to do this makes perfect sense. They're doing what they can to stay alive. For Downy or for whatever company is paying money to Roku for them to put the ad there, I guess it depends how much money you're paying, but like it feels like a no-win situation. Like there are certain ads I'm like, this was a huge waste of money and a huge waste of people's time for this ad to be made, because it's not, how is it possibly influencing my decision as a consumer to buy your product? I would say 80 to 90% of ads fall into that category. They're like, for example, I'll give another example. Let's say you're Coca-Cola and you pay for a Super Bowl ad. Why are you doing that? What is the benefit that you get from producing an ad? People know what Coca-Cola is. Everyone on the planet knows what Coca-Cola is. They probably know what it tastes like. They probably drank it a billion times.
I think part of it is,
why are you spending so much money on the ad?
It's awareness.
Like, can you guys help
me? Have you ever, we all know what McDonald's is, for example, but have you ever seen a McDonald's commercial and you know the burger doesn't look like what's on the screen, but it just makes you think, I could really go for McDonald's though. Like they're banking on that. They're banking that you maybe haven't had Coke in a while and you see this and you're like, man,
it works.
I haven't had a Coke in a while. I'm going to go buy one.
I get influenced.
Are you going to that's a fair counter argument, especially the fast food, because that's gotten me before. But like, I still got to stand by my point. Like, I also think that I have the general independence in my life to, like, if I think to myself, I want to, like, I don't know if I'm going to be that strongly reminded when I see a, first of all, a lot of commercials for Coke aren't even about the Coke. They're just like a commercial. Then at the end it says Coke. Like, how many commercials have you seen like that where like halfway through the commercial, you're like, I don't even know what this commercial
is. Yeah, they usually have like the smiling polar bear and then they zoom in on the bubbly, crisp, brown popping Coca-Cola and you're just like, that might wet my whistle right now.
These are bad examples. Like,
these are bad because it's like
State Farm insurance. Like,
yes.
Ooh, let me switch. Like, that is the example you're after, and no one's gonna go on a whim like, oh yeah, Jake.
But you know what might happen there, and I'm not shilling for ads because I'm gonna have my like 2 cents about this whole thing in a second. But for an example, with like State Farm, maybe you just bought a new car and you're just automatically going with whatever auto insurance company that you have had for a while. And that commercial reminds you, it's like, you know what? I really meant to go check out other insurance companies to see if I can get a lower rate. Maybe now this is the time. What I don't think people will do is necessarily run to State Farm specifically, but I think maybe they'll do their due diligence because they see a State Farm commercial. That said, when it's a less obtrusive thing, somewhere where I expect an ad to be, like the Super Bowl, or when I'm watching network TV, or even when I'm paying for Hulu or Netflix with ads and I know I signed up for this, I'm going to get advertised to, that's fine.
Yeah.
If I'm pausing a game to run to the bathroom and a freaking State Farm ad starts playing on my TV, I'm going to be like, what the hell is this? I bought my Xbox. Yeah. I did not want this intrusive ad here. My Xbox does not automatically put an ad in between games of Halo. I don't want this.
Yeah, well, it's offensive and it's obtrusive. And like, I do think, like, you know, to say, like, my rebuttal to your point about, like, you know, the State Farm example, like you being reminded to go and look at other insurance companies, like, I understand that principle, but like, it's the element of excess. Both in terms of how the commercial is made and how many commercials there are. Like, does putting Arnold Schwarzenegger in a State Farm commercial, like, does that increase your mental ability to hold the commercial in your head and therefore go look at State Farm later?
Honestly, like, though, I don't remember the jingle.
Most people are going to just Google insurance companies.
I don't remember, like, the jingle, John Cena was in a commercial, and for a while it was stuck in my head, and it was something about when you rented an apartment, like you would get credit score. It was maybe like a FICO thing. And that actually stuck in my head. And I'm not a renter, but I was like, man, if I was a renter, I would maybe try to grow my credit score doing this. And it was a catchy joke.
There are such things as good commercials. Like, call J.G. Wentworth, 877 cash now.
It's my money and I want it now.
Like, everyone, that's an example of a good ad because everyone knows it. And if I ever am in a situation in life where I guess I need cash now, I will remember that number. But like, there have to be diminishing returns. We are so barraged with ads on a constant basis that at a certain point, it's not going to add
more
value. Like, if I see a Downy commercial on TV and then I go, I'm annoyed with these commercials, I'm going to play PlayStation, and then I pause it and I see a Downy commercial, I don't know why I keep using that example.
It's like, getting absolutely out of hand. It used to be just cable. Then we moved to streaming because the commercials were annoying. It was the commercial-free alternative. Fantastic. Now it's between your streaming services. It's if you pause your streaming service, it's in the movies of your streaming service. So we're like, shit, get damn it. We're going to go to our video games. And now it doesn't matter what our alternative device is. It's going to be like, this is messed up. This is absolutely wrong. And then the other side right. of it is like, if I'm a game developer, okay, there was a certain stint of time that I put resources on to the pause screen, whether it's a constant scrolling of in-game tips, whether it's just like a menu, all these different details we put into the game. And now you're detracting from that. You're taking away from maybe little right. nuances that the person would have missed if it wasn't just on that screen.
Yeah. And I'm not like, again, I'm coming off like a crank here. I get that. But like, I'm not even saying this for my own benefit. Like, I'm not saying this because I'm annoyed at commercials. Like, I am, but that's not the point I'm trying to make. The point is that from a financial perspective, marketing of all types is like a multi-trillion dollar a year business, probably. I don't really know. But like, there's just no way that all ads are created equal. And there's no way that all that money being spent provides the return. Like, I'm sure there are people that are looking at that and they're saying that, like, they're doing whatever focus groups and learning that, like, oh, people actually bought this fabric softener because someone saw a PS5 ad and it got them to do it. Like, I have such
a
hard time believing that.
There's a whole separate rant that I've done in various friend groups where people have asked me, what do you think is the most evil, you know, profession? And they've said lawyer and things like that. And I always say marketing. I think marketing is the most... They're the people that convinced pregnant people to smoke cigarettes, for example, because marketing...
Well, again, I think there is... I don't want to like throw all marketing people under the bus. Like, I think there's a spectrum, right? But like, I do agree that there's a troubling aspect of it that they're like... There are people who are having meetings that are like... The whole point is like, all right, how do we like, you know, hijack this person's brain and their subconscious and or their conscious to like get them to like go buy a Pizza Hut pizza. Like, it's just it's weird. And like, it goes so deep too. Like, I think we've probably talked about this on the show before, but like, do you guys know what the logos for like Pizza Hut, McDonald's and Wendy's have in common? Like, think about those logos for a second.
Red.
The reason being that red is the color that, according to some scientist or some focus group somewhere, makes us hungrier. Just that little bit hungrier, and that's why the logos are red. So like, it's very dialed in. And so like, again, I'm willing to like trust that someone is like doing research. Like Roku, not so much. Roku is just like, we need to make more money. This is our way to make more money. But like, the companies that are going to put these ads on these idle screens, like, I'm sure they're looking into it and being like, all right, if we do this, it's going to provide us some return. I just like, I want to think better of like, I guess people in general that like, we're not going to like, let this work. Like, how can this work? How can this be the right way to market? There's just no way.
This is my, if they put this in Roku TVs, I will not buy a new Roku TV. I will get a non-Roku TV. I'll pay the extra bucks to not have this completely intrusive into my every aspect, because and then I would just buy a Roku stick. You can't, there's no way they can have your Roku stick communicate via HDMI out through the other inputs. So Roku stick is, sales are going to go up, TV sales are going to go down. That's just inherently what they're going to do. And then if
I think you're, well, you're giving too much credit to the consumer. You're giving too much credit to people to not just buy the Roku TV because it's cheap.
I'm giving just the right. I mean, we've seen what happened with Kellogg's when the CEO came out and said, basically, let them eat cake. People have boycotted Kellogg's so much so that they've had to slash their products to become cheaper than the generic brand because they took such a hard hit.
You're talking about the guy saying that we should all eat cereal
for
dinner?
Yes, we the people are a lot more powerful than you think.
It's not that we're not powerful. Like, we're definitely powerful, but like, I don't know. We're talking about this on this podcast, but like, is this a big enough issue? This is very different than the Kellogg's issue. This is a company saying, we want more ads. And, you know, you're talking about the Kellogg's guy going on the news and saying that the stupid thing that he said. Shout out to that guy. That's not going to happen for this because the news companies aren't going to run it, because guess how the news companies make their money? Their advertisement. Like, it's... I think people are going to buy Roku TVs because they're the cheapest TVs, and then this is going to happen, and then guess what? The more expensive TV that you just bought, that company's going to start doing it because they're going to look at Roku and say, hey, that worked.
Well, I mean, that's how it's gone with the streaming services. Just, they made the entry-level point to the streaming services, the ad version, and we do it because it's cheaper and it makes more economic sense, and then we just accept it. I think if I was buying the TV knowing that this was the thing that was going to happen, maybe I wouldn't be mad. If they're doing this retroactively to my existing Roku TV where I didn't sign up for this, piss off.
They probably can't do that. I would hope they can't do that, but I guess I don't know. I mean, again, I'm coming off like a crank, and like now I'm also like calling the general American consumer stupid, which like may or may not be true. And I'm not sitting here being like, I'm smarter than the general American. I'm like, I play into this, but it's very, very hard not to, is kind of my point. It's like everything has ads. As a consumer, I'm going to buy things. So like, am I not kind of propagating the problem just by existing? That's a very deep question to end this topic on. But yeah, like this is, I think we all kind of agree, and I was expecting us all to agree that like this is not great. And I would hope that more people than us are talking about it and are aware of it, but that might be a big ask. So yeah, hit us up on Twitter. @OWLeeLady6, @OWTactic, @OWNerdBomber, and our main show account, @OnlineWarriors1. I'm not even going to ask, do you want ads on your idle screens on your TV? Because you probably don't. I'll ask the much more philosophical question of where does it end? Where do you
think it ends? We don't need to go to crazy things like open source. We can go to the Amazon Fire Stick. We can do a Chromecast. We have options, and it's important to always remember we have options.
Which, and before we move on, shout out to Fire Sticks, which my Fire Stick, I think, started doing this pretty recently, and I hate it. And I'm sure it was like a ghost software update that they did, where now when I turn it on, it just starts playing an ad. Like, if without me touching anything, it's like, here's the home screen. Oh, this thing on the home screen, here's a video. And also, if you're depending on where your volume was last, like, it's loud. Why? There's no circumstance in which that's going to happen to me, and the ad is going to have a positive effect on my view of that company's thing, or that product, or that piece of media. There's just no way in which that's going to happen. I'm going to hate you for it. So why is it better for you? Someone explain it to me. Marketing majors, get on the Twitter sphere. Hit me up. Explain to me the whole industry of marketing, because I don't get it. Let's transition to our latter two topics, both of which are video games, which is probably going to make me a much happier boy. Let's talk about Jump Ship, because this is one of those things, of which there are many these days, where I hadn't heard of this, and it looks really good.
That's
what it's designed for. Like, this is a game that it seems like a no-brainer conceptually, right? But a lot of the talk that I've seen about it is basically like, hey, this is doing things that Starfield failed to do, and it's doing so in what seems like a very simple and straightforward way. It's just like, I don't know, I think to some extent we've lost sight of people want to play video games together. And like, this is just like you said, it's like, get a few of your buds and hop on a ship and go like explore space, kind of. And like, is it doing anything technically revolutionary? No, but like, I don't think it's really trying to. It's just trying to provide a good gameplay experience.
One of the,
like, was that your guys' read of this? Because that's what it felt like.
Yeah,
to me.
One of the interesting things, like even reading some of the developer comments about what they were shooting for with this game, was that everything was handcrafted. Like, they're trying to move away from procedural generation, which was one of the big things that, you know, Starfield tried to implement. And honestly, if you told me that this game was Starfield before I had played Starfield, like, it looks very, very similar graphically. And I feel like they added the co-op elements that people sort of gravitate to. And even like the gunplay and just the tightness of, you know, the worlds are made with purpose and made with a reason. And that was one of the biggest misses of Starfield, was that everything just kind of felt bland and samey. I think this has a recipe for success on their hands.
Yeah, I mean, what we talked about with Starfield a few times, like your experience with it notwithstanding, like when we watched all the promotional material, like I know at least one of us said at one point, like it's stretching itself too thin. Like, yes, there are 1,000 planets. That's
but 1,000
cool.
planets of what?
But yeah, 1,000 planets of what? And like, what if you didn't focus on making 1,000 planets to say you did? What if you instead focused on a very simple but tight and like you said, graphically as good, if not better, experience, because like players are probably going to respond to that more. Like, it doesn't, you don't have to reinvent the wheel when you come out with a sci-fi game. Like, this is not reinventing the wheel in really any way, I don't think. It's combining elements of things in, I think, a creative way, but it just kind of looks like a good old-fashioned romp, and there's zero wrong with
it. I also really like one of the things the developers said too, was that they're moving away from like a class system. And so moving away from like criticisms of Starfield and comparisons to that, even when you think about any kind of like co-op shooter, like Destiny, for example, you still had classes where you were limited in what you were able to do as a character. Like, you were kind of shoehorned into, you know, right, this is my power. And based on what the developers are saying here, anybody can do anything. It just depends on what you have equipped at the moment. And I think that's a really cool thing too. It leaves it very open-ended. You don't have to worry about, oh, okay, now I'm playing this game with four buddies and we're all like the magical wizard, which doesn't fit the genre of this game, but like, you know what I mean? Like the magical wizard type, and it's going to be super unbalanced experience. Anybody can do anything. And I think that's something that's kind of been lost in translation a little bit over the years. I feel like every co-op game that I've played lately, there is a class system. And a lot of times it works very, very well. But sometimes you do, like, you want to see, hey, my friend did something really cool, but I'm not allowed to do that because when I started this adventure, I didn't pick this class. And I think there's something cool to be said about, hey, anybody can do anything. You can coordinate with your friends however you want. If everybody wants to be a firefighter and pick up fire extinguishers, have at it. And I think that's pretty cool.
There's a very clear, I think, focus. Granted, I'm making it sound like we saw a lot and like we haven't seen a whole lot yet. But like, it feels like there is a very clear focus on what I'll refer to as like all hands on deck gameplay of like, you're in your ship and you're getting attacked and there's a fire in this part. Someone has to go put it out while someone else is flying the ship. And then the other person's shooting. And like, there's a job for everyone. Those jobs can always change. You're always kind of kept on your toes by what it looks like the game is making you do. The other thing that I really liked to read about and hear about is the idea, like you mentioned procedural generation as being like kind of overdone these days. This game goes back to what I believe they called a director. The gist of it and the kind of touch point that a lot of people would have, which I myself have, is Left 4 Dead. Left 4 Dead would basically react to how you were playing the game. So they would essentially, if the example this article uses, get a bit too wealthy and you might find yourself targeted by more pirates, sit stationary, you might get a meteor shower coming in that starts obliterating your ship. So like
the Hunger Games,
depending on how you are playing the game, a little bit like that too, where the game is going to react to you and try to make things harder for you, and like it in a fun way, basically. Like Left 4 Dead and a lot of zombie games do this, they will punish you for going into certain rooms. Like that's like the one of the most basic examples. It's like, oh, you want to explore this because there's this cool gear in here, well, get wrecked, we're sending a tank your way and now you're screwed. Like, that's fun. And it's not a revolutionary concept, but I think it works really well in a co-op environment in particular, because you're all working together, not just to like, not in the all hands on deck way and putting out fires, but you're also deciding what to do, right? And what you decide, how it has what looks like a direct and immediate impact. And like, I didn't play Starfield, but like Tactic, I think you said it very well, where like, 1,000 planets of nothing and like 1,000 planets of like, you go to planet 969 and like what happens there may or may not be at all influenced by what you had done up to that point, right? So like, how can the game kind of tighten up is I think a very interesting question. So like, yeah, this seems really good to me. I don't know, I'm bummed because it's PC and Xbox is what I read, which makes me
my sad. Biggest thing and games like what's that card game that we play where you have to work together to repair the ship?
Space Team.
Space Team adapted to like an RPG game, like that alone has just sold me. Like, forget the space parts, forget all the other stuff, just that aspect alone. Like when Among Us touched on that, it was just like, hey, this is kind of something,
right? Yeah, I mean, you know, it is again a very fundamental concept of like, space is dangerous. What did the guy from The Martian say? Space always tries to kill you. And like, work together so it doesn't kill you is a very easy to grip thing, but it can keep throwing things at you and it can continue to be interesting for, I think, what this game, the life cycle this game is looking for. So like, I don't know if this, like, is this going to be a $67 game? I have no idea, but it could be. I think it could be. I think it might have juice worth the squeeze, so to speak. I do have a lot of questions still. Like, I want to know more about the ship combat. I want to know more about the ship fixing. I don't know if that's like a mini game based thing or what. They show people putting out fires, but I think there's more to it than that. So there's probably more to come on this. Scheduled to hit early access in late 2024. It seems like for the moment, that's all we really know. So yeah, I'd fly with y'all. I'd like to be the pilot. We've talked about this before, haven't we? I think we talked about this with one of our Patreon producers in the past. What would your spaceship role be? I would like to think I said pilot, but maybe I didn't. I don't know.
I'd be a gunner.
Jump ship.
Your next purchase in terms of like game console should be a Steam Deck, and then you can play all the PC games and the indie games that you love. Get them on sale. Play with your friends.
This is neither here nor there, but you know what I read about the Steam Deck the other day?
That is awesome.
It was actually 3 months ago. It was in December. Apparently at one point Valve had to like put out a press release or something that to tell Steam Deck owners to stop huffing the fumes from the vents.
It smells good. I'm not going to lie to you. What? I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, no. Oh, no. They got you?
I mean, I'm not sitting there popping my Steam Deck.
She goes,
but, like, the fan, when hits. You're playing a very intensive game, the fan kicks on, and it is, it's a scent. It's a scent.
Yeah, apparently, people enjoying the smell has become somewhat of a meme, and admitted many folks really like doing it. Steam support. Someone contacted Steam support and they said, as with all electronics, it is generally not recommended you inhale the exhaust fumes on your device. While there are no safety concerns with general usage, directly inhaling the device's vent fumes should be avoided.
Yeah, like
we understand that may be a meme, but please refrain from this behavior for the safety.
I am not sticking it up under my schnoz. That said, like sometimes you go to put it down.
That said, it rules.
When you go to put it down or like you stand up and the angle just gets right up in your nostrils. It's not a bad smell. I wouldn't go out there and
you get it.
Like promote people sniffing their decks, but
yeah, please. Our lawyer is gesturing frantically to me.
Don't
off,
go
off camera
sniffing
here.
Decks.
There's no camera, but don't go sniffing decks. Not on our watch. Yeah, I know that's maybe I'll get a Steam Deck, but I won't. I won't be huffing the fumes or whatever phraseology you want to use. We're gonna take a break now before coming back to talk about Eternal Strands. But before we do that, it's that time of the show where I shout out our fantastic Patreon producer, Mr. Stephen Keller. Stephen is 0-1 in the quiz tracking. I just figured I'd get the nasty bit out of the way before I get to good stuff. He participated in a quiz because he had a guest spot on the show earlier this year. That was one of the many perks that he enjoyed as a result of his Patreon subscribership at the highest of our three levels, which was the night level, which got him a Patreon producer credit. He gets this shout out every episode. He gets input into the weekly game segment, which I am not hosting this week, so I plan on winning. He also, of course, gets access to the monthly vlog and secret segment. There is also a lower level of Patreon support, which is the Squire level, which gets you access to the secret segment and the vlog. And there is a page level, which gets you access to the monthly secret segment. So patreon.com/onlinewarriorspodcast can provide you with all the details on any and all of those levels of support. You can head over there, say hi to us, say hi to Steven, and consider what this show means to you. And if it means a lot to you or even a little bit to you, it may be worth making a little investment and giving back to us so we can continue providing content for you, as Steven has so graciously done. Thanks again to Steven. We will be back in a short while to talk about Eternal Strands.
There are no ads this week because boo ads.
All right, welcome back. We are back to talk about Eternal Strands. Now, we got a reveal trailer for this last week, and whereas I liked the game we just talked about a lot, Jump Ship, I wasn't really feeling this one at all. Like, and I don't know if it's not my genre, because like there's maybe an argument to be made for that. But it also just kind of felt like it. Like I said about Jump Ship that it was a lot of things we had seen before. This was also like basically a million things we've seen before, and none of it looked as well executed nor as fun. I mean, someone talked me out of this, but like I wasn't really was not vibing with this very much.
It seemed very generic, and I feel like there have been other games that look very similar. And I know this was supposed to be a team of, what, ex-Ubisoft and
BioWare,
another studios.
I believe.
BioWare people coming together. And you guys know me and BioWare. Typically, BioWare game, I'm bored. Like, Mass Effect is the OG greatest for me. But this just looked a little generic. And so I don't know if I just need to see more. Like, are there going to be more role-playing elements like I would expect out of a BioWare game? Is this going to be very, like, map point driven like a Ubisoft game? And then it just felt like it was trying to copy the style of the Legend of Zelda games a little bit, the new like Breath of the Wild games. Like, it kind of had that style for characters and environment going for it. And like, it almost seemed like it just was trying to be an amalgamation, right?
That's the right word. It is. And the story, I would also say, sounds like something that ChatGPT might have spit out. Just like the little description of it. This is the longtime creative director of BioWare's Dragon Age series, Mike Laidlaw, along with a number of other quote-unquote AAA industry vets. This is a new game dev studio, Yellow Brick Games. I think this is their first game, so this may be a big deal for them. Yeah, I mean, it felt, again, just kind of... There's a lot of rote stuff going on, and like most fantasy games, I would say it's probably going to live and die by the magic system and the physics manipulating system, which, like you said, looked very Zelda-y, and as much as I've never played that game, that's what it looked like to me. So I don't know.
I don't think Zelda-y is a good comparison. I read comparisons to Monster Hunter World, where it's just like large monster beat-em-up game, and that's the vibe that I got as well. And I need more substance. And I'm hoping that it's just they haven't put out a better trailer yet to get us excited. But like, big monster beat 'em up isn't doing it.
Well, there's big monsters. And yeah, it drew Shadow of the Colossus comparison as well. There's some big monster fights, but there's also quite a few not big monster fights. Like, I don't know if those are bosses. And you're climbing up them and doing stuff, which like is I guess, a little bit interesting. But I just don't. Yeah, I wasn't enthralled. And like, again, like, I'm kind of like I was saying before about Jump Ship. Like, I'm not saying that every game needs to come to me and be like, here's this big new thing that we're doing. But if you're going to do the same thing that various studios have always done, you need to stand apart in some way, even if that way is just really tight looking execution. And I did not see that here. And like Tactic, like you said, like, maybe we'll see that in a future trailer. This was probably just a really, really quick taste of what we're going to get. But nothing really woke me up for this. This isn't coming until 2025, so there's a long way to go before we see maybe even more trailers for this. But yeah, it just, I don't know, it wasn't really doing it for me. Do you guys have anything more you even want to say about it, or should we just move on?
No, I think that was pretty much it.
Well, that brings us to What Are You Up To Wednesday. After all, it is Wednesday. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been up to. I think I might have gone first last week. I don't really remember, but... This week, I'm not going to go first. And instead, I want to swing it over to Nerd Bomber and have Nerd Bomber go first today.
All right. So something that was a big deal for me, as you guys know, we posted about this a little bit on our Twitter. I am a huge Noah Kahan fan. I've been a fan since, and I don't want to be that person that's like, I knew him before he was cool, but I knew him before he was cool. I've been listening to his music since 2017, when some of his first like individual songs dropped, and then EPs and early albums. And there have been a few times where he's like passed through my area, but you know, timing just didn't work out and I didn't get a chance to see him. And now he's playing arena tours because he blew up and tickets are very expensive. But Tectic was an absolute awesome person and got tickets to his Toronto show. So we made the trek to Toronto over the weekend and we saw his show, and it was a phenomenal experience.
It was great.
Like 10 out of 10. He was sick. Unfortunately, had to cancel the show the night after ours in London, Ontario. And he was sick and he still performed and put on one of the best shows that I think I've seen in my history as a concert goer. Caveat being, I haven't seen like Taylor Swift. I know that's, you know, considered one of the highest pinnacles of concert experience. That's like a 4-hour show. But in terms of like, you know, not mega, mega artists, he is the best concert I think that I've seen ever. And it helps, you know, I knew every word, and it was just a very cool experience to be around thousands of people who also knew every word to every song, and it was just really, really cool.
There's something to be said about going to a concert and knowing every word to every song. When I tell you my throat was hoarse at the end of that, I had this same fantastic experience as Nerd Bomber did. And I've never been to a concert or liked an artist where I took the time to learn every single lyric of every single one of their songs they're playing. And man, does it draw you in. It not even just for this artist in particular, but like, if you're going to go to a concert, it is worthwhile to do a little homework and do that little extra due diligence, because like to be able to sing along with every song is a good time.
Yeah, I think we're living in a great age of concert going. Like, I think concerts are just kind of...
Not really. Not because of Ticketmaster.
Well, okay, that's a good point.
Concerts, artists, yes. Ticketmaster, you're destroying the joy.
Concert experiences are better than they've ever been. But the pre-concert experience of getting tickets is as bad as it's ever been. So that's a very good point. It's a very good caveat. I haven't been to a concert in many years.
I will say...
That's my gist of it.
Concert price tickets notwithstanding, I did appreciate... So one of the things that NoahCon did do... I'm sure you've all seen horror stories of, you know, your Taylor Swift's, your Beyonce's, those concerts go on sale and then bots buy the tickets and immediately you then end up seeing them on StubHub or SeatGeek or something for like 10 times the price value or the face value of the ticket. One of the things that I thought was really ingenious that he did, which I'm sure for some people who ended up not being able to go to the show was a bit of a pain, they were non-transferable tickets. So the only way that you could get rid of that ticket was basically to just put it back in the Ticketmaster pool. Like you would get your refund and it would be sold again at face value by Ticketmaster. So you couldn't sell it on, you know, any of your third party websites and you couldn't inflate the price at all. While the face value of the tickets was still very expensive, I mean, we got floor tickets, didn't have to fight as many bots. I'm sure there were still bots who got the ticket and then had to throw it back on the site once they realized they couldn't sell it. But we were able to get floor tickets for face value and not pay. God, the last time I looked at a Taylor Swift concert, I think floor tickets were something like $10,000 a piece, which is absolute insanity and is crazy and should be illegal.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that.
So props to him and his team for, you know, trying to get ahead of that, because the whole bot reseller market thing makes me sick.
Yeah,
it makes me sick
for anything. I was gonna say, not just concert, just for everything in the
economy. Was something that was very one of many things that was very badly aggravated by COVID, because like I'm sure I talked about it on the show, I fought the bots for quite a while to try and get a Switch
sales,
and then
yeah.
PS5. And that was really infuriating. Like it's one of those things where like it feels like there's no winner. Like, yeah, I guess the people who resold it for massive profit are winning, but like the world is losing. And like, yeah, concerts, it's like I would tear my hair out if I was an artist and my concert tickets were being resold like that. Like it would drive me nuts. So it's good that he came up with a way to combat that, like you said.
Outside of that, you know, then being in Toronto, we were very close to the Path of Totality for the eclipse. So, you know, made a jaunt into the Path of Totality and it was cloudy. So there was that.
Very cool.
But it got dark. So it was cool, but it was dark. It was cloudy and you couldn't actually see it, but it got really dark like nighttime. Mm. So,
yeah, that's really unfortunate. I'm glad the concert was cool. I'm going to split you guys in half, which I don't usually do, but I'm going to go in the middle here. Tuck, you'll get your turn shortly. I watched an entire Netflix show in a week, which I don't really do very often. I watched The Three Body Problem, which is 8 episodes, currently out on Netflix, based on a very famous science fiction book, technically a series of books, but I think this first season only chronicles the first book out of 3. In as much as I watched it all in 1 week, it's 8 episodes and they're hour-long episodes, it wasn't like the most amazing... I'm not here to say it was like the most amazing show I've watched. It had a lot of ups and downs. I think it did a number of things right, and I think it did a number of things wrong, in the sense that I've heard so many great things about the source material, and now I'm mostly left just wanting to read the book. It fell into a lot of tropes, which that genre I think tends to do these days, especially in television, but some of the acting was good. Benedict Wong is in it, and he's like amazing. He's really the only... I think he's like the only... my wife said there's a lot of people from Game of Thrones on the show, and I think it was created by the guys who did Game of Thrones. I haven't watched Game of Thrones, so a lot of those guys went over my head. I know Samwell Tarly is on it. That's like, I know enough to know that. But so yeah, a bit of a mixed bag. Interesting premise. Worth watching for that alone. So that was a fun watch. And book-wise, I am currently reading a book called Duma Key by Stephen King. I'm going back to my Stephen King roots. I am a perennial Stephen King boy. Duma Key is about a guy who loses his arm in a construction site accident. And you guys have heard of like phantom limb syndrome. Most people have. And, weird stuff starts happening phantom limb-wise, which is like, it's a classic Stephen King premise. My one regret about reading it now, I'm loving the book so far, but it takes place in the Florida Keys. So it just makes, I kind of wish I was reading it during the summertime, but you know, I'm really enjoying the book so far. So that's the gist of things for me. I'm still playing Need for Speed Most Wanted and it's amazing, but I don't have much more to say about that for the moment. tactic. Why don't you wrap us up here?
So I did all the same things with Nerd Bomber, but there's one key thing that she forgot to mention, and that is, guys, we had the most pile of nachos. So after the concert, all we had was like lunch around 2 o'clock.
Okay, here's a TMI insight. So I didn't want to eat dinner before the show because I was like, if I get a tummy ache, if I have something greasy or something cheesy, I get a tummy ache during the middle of this concert, I'll be livid. So we just didn't eat.
So we didn't eat, and we waited till after the concert to then go and get nachos. And we thought it was going to be a little pile of nachos. So we actually got nachos and chicken fingers. And this thing was like, this was easily the size of like an entire serving platter of nachos. And boy, did we go to town. And it had like banana peppers and like all this other stuff on it. And it just has like a sweet, tangy, spicy. And it was just, guys, whenever you go out, just recommend nachos. Find a place with the best local nachos and you hold on to that place, dear, because it might not be around forever. That's my what are you up to.
I love nachos. A nacho. There's so many different kinds of nachos and they can all please you. You know, that's just me and nachos. Yeah, well, that brings us to quiz time. And as I said, I am not in charge this week. I believe it's Nerd Bomber this week. Running through the rankings, Nerd Bomber is 6-3. She's top banana or whatever what's the phrase I'm looking for? Is it top banana? She's
coolest
winning.
Person?
I myself am 5-4. Tactic is 4-5. Steven Owen won. So Tactic, you have a chance to put us into a tie at second place this week. And I have a chance to get a little bit closer to getting past Nerd Bomber. So Nerd Bomber, what is our topic this week?
This week, we are quizzing and celebrating Shaquille O'Neal.
The man himself. The big guy.
The man himself. All right. So as per usual, this is Price is Right style. Whoever gets numerically closer without going over is going to get the point. There's 5 total questions, and each of you get a single lifeline, which can either be +1 in your opponent or using the number 1. Are you guys ready?
I was born ready.
Who is going first?
It's me. It's your boy.
All right. So, illegal. How tall is Shaq in feet and inches?
Ooh, this feels like, for whatever reason, this feels like something I should know. I don't know why, it just does. He's a big guy. I'm going to go with my gut first instinct, and I'm going to say 6'8". 6'8".
Tactic, what you got?
I think he's taller. 6'8" is a tall boy. Do I just go right off the bat? 6'9".
All right, he uses the +1 on the first question of the game to great effect.
Yes.
Shaquille O'Neal is 7'1".
Okay, yeah, I think that was probably a pretty good +1 usage. I felt like I was in there, but there's only so big of a range, right? So I respect the gameplay.
All right, Shaquille O'Neal, we all know him. He's an elite player. He'll go down as one of the greats. How many times has he been an NBA All-Star? Like official, you know, designation NBA All-Star?
11 times.
Boy, I don't know. That feels like too much. Don't get me wrong. I think he's great, but I don't even know how long his playing career was. I'm going to say 4 years.
All right, Tactic moves ahead again. Shaq was an NBA All-Star 15 times.
I didn't give Shaq enough credit. Dang it.
You certainly did not.
Sun's getting low immediately.
All right, this is going to be the last basketball-related question. The other two will be a little bit more fun. Not that basketball's not fun, but
basketball's plenty fun. Come on now.
Right, but like basketball statistics felt a little bit too much like low-hanging fruit, so I only did 3, and then the other two, the last two, are going to be a little bit more like off the cuff.
I don't know how tall he is a basketball statistic, but I get your point.
I mean, it's on his like basketball player
card. How many basketballs stacked up is he?
No. What was Shaq's average career points per game?
Oh, man. I mean, let me just start by saying, I don't know. But I'm going to go ahead and guess 22.
I thought he was big on the 3-pointers. I thought that was his whole shtick. That's a really good guess. Because that's only 7 dunkaroos. I'm going to go 15.
All right, illegal. You're back in it. He had an average of 23.7.
Oh, I was right there, baby. That's what I'm talking about. You'd love to see it.
All right, so now on to those self-proclaimed fun questions.
Woohoo!
So Shaq once turned down a deal with Reebok after hearing a mother complain about how expensive his shoes were. How much was that deal purportedly worth?
I do like this question. Also, Tactic, you're first. I don't know why I'm talking.
Can you tell us what year?
I don't know the year. Sorry. I didn't write that down, so I don't have it.
Can you tell us what year?
No. Definitively, no.
Nice of you to ask again, though.
I had to put on my dad voice. Can you tell us? This was a 2-year, $2 million contract. No, not years, just a $2 million contract, straight up.
Okay, it's got to be way more than that, but I'm going to go $2 million and one penny just because that's how the game is played.
Illegal heads tied up the game. It was a $40 million deal he turned down.
$2 million? He ain't
gonna, price of the sheep.
He ain't going to get out of bed for that. Come on now. The Shaq we're talking about.
That's what I figured.
All right, so we already know Shaq has been in, you know, movies, stuff like that, had some TV appearances, but I'm not sure if you know he also has a hand in video games. Shaq Fu was a 2D fighting game published by EA for the Sega Genesis and the NES in 1994. What was the aggregate review score when the game came out?
This can't have done numbers. Are we talking on a scale of like 0 to 100?
Yeah, what's the
percentage? Yeah.
I mean, there's no way this thing did numbers. Otherwise, I would know about it. This was bad, but it wasn't that bad. This is... We're in 43 territory. 43.
That's exactly what I was going to guess.
I feel like I'm there, man. I feel really good.
I know. I feel really good about if that was my answer, too, Dick.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm going to give Shaq a little more credit and say a 55%.
And Illegal takes the
cake. God bless America.
After a slow start out of the gate, the game got an aggregate review score of 45%.
Wow.
And was at the time thought of one of the worst games of all time, although it did go on to receive a sequel.
Let's go. That would don't call it a comeback, or do call it a comeback, because that was a comeback. I moved to 6-4, Tectic to 4-6, and shout out to Shaq. Thanks, man. Thanks for doing everything you've done, because that was a big W for me. We're gonna leave now, and we'll come back next week. I know that's not how I usually end the show, but that's what the plan is. If you like what you listen to, you can head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review there. Hit us up on our Patreon, patreon.com/OnlineWarriorsPodcast, or the Twitter handles mentioned previously in the episode. Yeah, thanks everyone for coming out. Hope you enjoyed the eclipse. Hope you enjoyed the championship game. Hope you enjoy the rest of this week and all weeks beyond. And stay safe and keep on podcasting.